I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
How far would you go to protect yourself when the system meant to protect you never does? In a town of just a few hundred people, one man made fear a daily reality. And one day, everything changed. This is the story of a small town in Missouri and the man no one wanted to name. Welcome back to Macabre Mondays, where mystery meets macabre with your favorite Deadly Mary duo. I'm Ale.
And I'm Tom.
Your guides through the strange, through the sinister, through
the spooky.
Where I tell the stories and he gets dragged along for the ride.
I don't like how you're plotting right now.
Well, today's episode is actually our first requested listener episode of 2026.
Wow, already 2026, starting it off strong.
Yes, so this was actually suggested last season, but we didn't get a chance to get to it because Scrappy had passed away and, it, you know, the chapter was over. And yeah. So I was like, you know what? We're going to do this first thing of chapter two. And tonight... Oh, I just can't wait. This listener episode is coming from Barbara. She is awesome. She's always tuning into the episodes and she's always chatting with us on socials, which is awesome. I love it so much. And she really, really, really wanted you to hear this one.
Oh, no. What are you doing to me, Barbara?
Yeah, we both honestly can't wait to see what you have to say or your reaction. Because when she told me about it, I was like, you know what? I've heard of this case before. But I didn't go into deep, deep detail. And so I sure did.
And cue my quote, I'm already not liking this.
I am, though. Are you ready?
I guess is ready. Wait, where are we going?
That's what I was going to ask you. Where do you think we're going today?
All right, hold on. What time is it? Okay.
You're not going to get Taco Bell.
No.
Oh, there's still a possibility, I guess.
East Coast, West Coast.
West Coast. Oh, actually, I need to look at a map.
Oh, Lord.
The fact that I'm like, I know the cases on certain states, but I don't know. We are going Midwest, baby.
Midwest?
Yes.
All right.
So sorry about that.
Top of the Midwest or Central?
We're in the mid.
In the mid.
We're in the center.
All right.
We're in the center. We're in the center.
Is it Illinois?
No.
Is it Missouri?
Yes.
Boom, baby.
We are going to Skidmore, Missouri.
Skidmore?
Yeah, have you ever heard of it?
No.
Yeah, Skidmore, Missouri. I know.
It's an interesting town.
Interesting name. And I find it just funny. Not shitting on Skidmore, Missouri at all whatsoever.
I see what you did there.
Not at all whatsoever, okay? I just do find it funny. Have you ever seen the show Schitt's Creek?
Yes.
Okay, well, it kind of was giving me that vibes because like Skidmore and then Schitt's Creek, like the only reason why they bought the town was because it was called Schitt's Creek and they were rich or whatnot.
Man, now so, I kind of want to rewatch Schitt's Creek.
Me too. I was thinking about it the other day. I'm not going to lie because it's been a while. I can't.
All right, enough Stan.
Oh my head. Yeah, what were you going to say?
What I was going to say, we should also rewatch Revenge.
Oh my God. What a good show. Oh, I miss Revenge. That's a good one. We should rewatch it.
I'll never forget the day that I introduced you to that show.
It was so good.
And you
good.
Saw the first episode, and instantly it was a, we must binge this whole
You know
whole
what sucks, though? It
series.
Takes you like 7 hours just to watch one episode. Actually,
Fellow
not
partners.
7 hours, like 7 days just to watch one episode, because he falls asleep,
okay,
or he's like,
okay.
Can we watch something
hold
else?
On. Fellow partners, if one of you is a big TV watcher or a binger and the other isn't, how do you solve these issues?
Oh, yeah. How do you guys solve this? Because the way we solve it...
Because I'm just not a huge TV person all the time. Like, I'll watch something, but then I get bored.
Yeah, the way we solve it is I'll just go ahead and watch it either way, with or without him. It's so funny, though, because, and I'm sure this is very relatable, a lot of times when I am watching these shows, he ends up coming up. He's like, what's going on?
Okay, that's just because randomly Gino will say the wildest things.
Tell me how I got Tom into 90 Day Fiancé. Okay, like he knows the
lore. I know
lore,
all, every single, the before lore. The 90 days, during the 90 days, the retreat.
The couples retreat, the
and you know
diaries.
How I'm ecstatic because we have some, what are they called? What are they called? What are they called when they're in person?
Oh, the tell-alls?
Tell-alls.
Yeah.
We got tell-alls coming up. Shit, man.
Anyways, I find that so funny. But tell us how you guys solve those issues because, yeah, it's tough to watch a show with Tom. But we're going to Skidmore, Missouri, baby.
Skidmore.
We're going to the year of 1981, to be exact.
Okay. Wasn't that long ago.
Skidmore, Missouri is a very small town. It's always seems to have been that way. Even at its busiest, I was reading that it never had more than a few hundred people. In the late 1970s and early 80s, well, where we'll be today, the population was around 284 people. So,
okay.
A small, 284.
Yeah.
To put that into perspective, right? Because to me, I'm like, 284? Again, I grew up in New Jersey, right, like in the tri-state area. That sounds like...
That's like one block.
I was going to say, that's like one block at where I grew up, okay? So, but to put that into perspective, that's about the size of a large wedding. Or a small high school graduation.
Well, I was going to say, that's actually 20 more people than my graduating class.
Okay, that's, yeah, so exactly, so than a high school graduation. So imagine that. That is literally the town. Now, the highest recorded population that I found was 350 people in 2007. And
damn.
As of 2024, it's actually closer to 232. Now, I know, I'm rambling about the population of this. It's just such a small town. And I was so shocked when I found out this information.
Oh my gosh, I'm shivering in my timbers about the population.
Are you scared? This is why she wanted you to hear it. No, I'm joking. But here, as you can imagine, everyone knows everyone. There's only a handful of streets. There's one main road, a few local businesses, a bar, grocery store, a post office, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. A lot of farmland from what I was seeing. Now, Skidmore sits in Nodaway County, surrounded by a lot of the farmland. We're talking, you know, cornfields, open roads, long stretches of quiet, pretty much where you grew up, I would assume.
Yeah, basically, honestly.
Basically, yes. It was a place where people didn't lock their doors and a place where neighbors would wave as you pass each other on the road. You know, kids would ride bikes.
Oh, this is 100% how I grew up.
How you grew up, yes. Honestly, when I was reading into it, obviously where you grew up has more population, but this is just a bit smaller.
Is that from 1978?
Oh, where are you at? Hold on.
The first slide.
It was from back in the day, that's for sure. I don't know what year it was, but it was from back in the day.
I'm feeling it's 78.
Just because of the snow? Maybe.
Yeah, the Midwest got hit by a massive blizzard called the Blizzard of 78.
Oh, yeah, that's why you think it's that? Okay. Maybe it could be. I'm not entirely sure. But if you think about it for a second, okay, these kind of small towns can also mean something else. You know, maybe problems were handled a lot more quietly if possible.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Okay. If something did go wrong, there's really nowhere to hide.
Also very true. Everybody knows everybody.
Everybody knows everybody, right? And by the time today's story begins, Skidmore was already struggling. The railroad had shut down years earlier, which hurt a lot of local businesses, and the school had been consolidated, meaning that kids were bussed out of town. Jobs were leaving. A lot of young people were moving away as well. So the town was shrinking slowly. And in a place that small, as you can imagine, because I know you know, reputation really matters.
Mm-hmm.
Very much matters. People knew who you were. They knew your past. They knew what you were capable of. And there was one man in Skidmore whose name people didn't like to say.
Okay. Who's this guy?
Think of Voldemort. Imagine, no. Not because he was powerful or because he was really important, but because he was actually known as the town bully.
Oh, no.
Tom hates bullies.
No, all I'm thinking of is like Christmas bullies. Story and the little kid that's wearing the raccoon hat.
Oh, why did I think of Scrooge? And I was like, that's not Christmas Story, that's Scrooge.
Kind of him, too.
Kind of him, too, yes. And this town bully's name was Ken Rex McElroy.
Nah, you sound like a bully.
You darn tootin' do sound like a bully. Now, before Ken McElroy became someone people were afraid of, he was just a kid from Skidmore. From what I was reading, with a very, 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 very extensive past, he was born in 1934. He was the 13th of 16 children.
Damn.
Big family. His parents were poor sharecroppers, and the family moved pretty often following work wherever they could find it. Now, money, as you can imagine, was always very tight, and the stability wasn't really a thing. In their family.
Mm-hmm.
Ken didn't have much of an education. He actually dropped out of school by eighth grade and never learned to read well.
Okay.
As an adult, he never really held a steady job. At least not one anyone could really clearly point to, but somehow he always seemed to have money. Nobody knew the hell he did.
I got a question already.
Okay.
How do you not hold a steady job? But then two, how do you not hold a steady job and not run out of potential jobs in a town this big?
That's what's interesting. No one really knew what he did, but he never went without money. Like, he always had money. And they were... Right. Right. Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Bank robber.
Oh, I didn't go there. But yeah, I was thinking that. I was thinking he was robbing for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm assuming. Because how is it that nobody knows what you're doing, and you somehow always have cash on you? Interesting. Ooh, drug dealer, maybe?
Speaking of drug dealer, random side note.
What?
Did you see that the Canadian snowboarder that became like the big drug cartel guy actually just got arrested?
Oh, really?
They finally caught him. Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. That's another thing we saw in the news that we were
sorry for the sidetrack, but yeah.
But even though nobody knew where his money was coming from, he would still drive newer pickup trucks. He would carry cash.
That's so weird.
Yeah, and people noticed that things just really didn't add up. So by his teenage years, local police already knew his name. At first, it was a lot of small stuff. Okay, petty theft, breaking into sheds, stealing livestock. So to me...
My man, why are you thieving?
I know.
In a town this small?
I know.
Everybody's going to see, hey... That's my still weed whacker that you just stole from me.
Right. And I'm glad that you are noticing this. Yes.
Okay, keep going.
So at first it was the small stuff, right? Which is making me assume that's how he's making money. He's stealing from other people and probably reselling it. Yeah, pawn shop and all that. And money in an area like this goes a long way, I would assume. So
probably.
Things like that in a rural farming town, people are going to complain about. They're not really going to panic over it, but they will complain about it. And over time, that behavior that he was doing didn't stop. It actually just escalated. Okay. And that's when Ken stopped being seen as just a troublemaker and started becoming something else. From the 1960s through the late 70s, Ken was charged and indicted roughly 24 times.
Holy shit.
Homeboy was in and out. Okay. His criminal record stretched from the early 60s all the way through 81, nearly 20 years. Okay, so this guy is like, I mean, he's like a super senior.
I was going to say, if anyone's ever watched Andy Griffith's show, it's in the town of Mulberry. And it makes me think I can't think of the guy's name, but there was a guy that was kind of a reoccurring criminal. And it was just constantly he'd get arrested, brought in jail.
And taken back
it's
out.
A small town like this, right. So no joke, their jail had two jail cells. And they would just release him back out and say, all right, you know better than this, but we'll see you again.
Wow. Oh, I've never seen it. It's a show or a movie?
It's a show.
Really?
It's like an old series. They had a whole little, like, that's the song that I constantly whistle randomly.
What's the song? Whistle it.
It's like...
I didn't even know that you were whistling that. For all I knew, you were just whistling for whistling purposes.
Like, no, that is the Andy Griffith theme song. And
well, that's cool.
It was based out of North Carolina.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that. So as you can imagine, we've got nearly 20 years of criminal record.
Just in and out.
In the early 60s, Ken is in his mid-20s. His first run-ins with the law were mostly just property crimes, like I said, right? One of the most common charges was livestock rustling.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I had no idea what the hell that meant. So I had to look that up. I was like, livestock rustling. I don't even think I'm pronouncing it right. But from what I was reading in farming communities, livestock rustling is the theft of animals, usually cattle or hogs, often taken at night, moved to another county, and sold or slaughtered before the owner even realizes that they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. That's interesting. And for farmers, this isn't just theft. This is literally their livelihood.
Yeah.
So you are stealing food from their table. And during this time, Ken was charged with stealing the cattle, breaking into barns and sheds, and stealing farm equipment.
Oh.
Yes. So as you could tell, Ken doesn't really seem to give a fuck.
No.
He doesn't care. He's like, you know what? If I want it, I'm going to get it. Yeah, I'm going to get it. Most of these cases ended quietly, and it was kind of sad because either witnesses backed out or charges were dropped or the cases just never made it to trial. Now, at first, people assumed it was just a matter of time before he would be held accountable. And the reason why a lot of the witnesses would back out, which I'm going to talk a little bit more about it, it's because he would actually bully them.
Oh.
Yes, he would scare them.
I mean, again, small town. I don't think it'd be that hard to figure out who is going to be your witness.
Right, exactly. Exactly, as you can imagine. I'm going to get into it. You'll see. But let's say it's later 60s now. He's in his early 30s. As the decade went on, Ken's behavior became much more aggressive.
Okay.
We're going from petty theft to livestock rustling, because I just learned a new term. He wasn't just stealing anymore. At this point, he started threatening people.
Oh, really?
Yes. Ken was actually charged with assault with a deadly weapon.
Oh, what?
Yes, threatening neighbors with firearms and firing shots at property.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, we've taken it up a couple notches.
We've taken it a couple notches, yes. And another thing that I was reading about him is that, we're going to learn a lot about Ken, but we're just getting started. Ken also was an animal abuser.
Oh.
Yes. So
I really don't like you, Ken.
Can suck a fat one, for sure. For sure. In rural Missouri, as you can imagine, this kind of behavior wasn't just brushed off as boys being boys. Like, at this point,
pointing
a gun at someone is obviously serious. But again, the pattern repeated. Witnesses would back out, charges were dropped, or the cases just never made it to court.
I mean, yeah, I'm not going to sit there and witness somebody too.
But also, you got to think about it. Imagine the residents of Skidmore, Missouri. This kind of sucks. Right? Why is more stuff, like, if it's like clear cut, he did it, why the hell he not in prison?
That's true. It's true.
Okay. So keep that in mind. Let's go fast forward to the early 70s. One of the most documented cases involved a local farmer named Romaine Henry. During a dispute, Ken shot him twice in the stomach.
What the?
Yep. He shot him twice in the stomach. Thankfully, he survived. Henry survived. But Ken was charged with assault. But while he was awaiting trial, Henry later reported something very unsettling, that Ken actually parked his truck outside of Henry's home more than 100 times, sometimes for hours, sometimes overnight, just sitting there, watching, intimidating him.
What the hell?
Mm-hmm. Intimidating him. So eventually, with all this happening, like, Henry refused to testify and the charges were dropped because Henry's like, I don't even want to.
Also, why is he only getting charged with assault?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That should be attempted murder.
I know.
I feel like we're only scratching the surface so far.
Only scratching the surface.
Based on how you're explaining this, and I'm not liking how this is going.
Well, as you can imagine, people by now, they are understanding how this is going to work. Okay, Ken's just going to do whatever the fuck Ken wants, and Ken's going to keep getting away with it. So the fact that he gets to the point where he is just shooting people,
yes.
Who the fuck do you think you are?
For real.
Like, who do you think you are? At this point, I'm like, you should be running because, like, anyways, okay. By the early 1970s, Ken McElroy was already in his late 30s. By that point, he had actually been married multiple times. Multiple times. Most sources that I could find said that Ken was married at least 4 times.
Damn.
4 times.
Who's even going to want to marry this guy?
He was marrying underage girls. Yes. Yes. In this documentary that I watched, because there is a documentary, his kids are now older and they do speak on the documentary. Yes. Other residents talk in the documentary as well, and they talk about how he would date young girls. That was like his thing. That was his thing.
How's he not getting arrested for that?
Barbara, if you're listening, because I know you are.
What the hell?
So, from what I was reading, several of those relationships overlapped and followed the same pattern. Control, isolation, and intimidation. Now, this matters, okay? Because Trina McLeod was the one of the girls that I'm going to talk about. And she wasn't his first wife. She was one of the last ones. Okay? In 1971, Trina McLeod was 12 years old. Now, remember, he's in his late 30s.
Okay. I'm sorry. I was thinking maybe 15, 16. You're going down to 12?
She was 12 years old when Ken began a sexual relationship with her. This relationship was not hidden from the community. Remember, Ken doesn't give a fuck. Ken is doing whatever Ken wants to do, and it's disgusting.
How are you marrying a 12-year-old?
Well, people knew about the relationship, but the fear and silence were already part of their daily life in Skidmore, because if you kind of, at this point, the message is, if you cross me, then you're going to regret it. And now that we know that he shot Henry in the stomach, it's very much like, what can I do? What am I going to do? It's going to be the same pattern. He's just going to keep getting what? You know what I mean?
Oh my goodness.
By the time Trina was 14, she was pregnant. Yes, she was pregnant. At that point, Trina tried to leave him. And from what I was reading, she tried to leave him because she was a child. She was pregnant.
No shit.
Yes, she was pregnant. And she was obviously being abused. I mean, she cannot consent. So there's nothing that you can tell me that she's like, yeah, I did want to do that. No, she cannot consent.
Oh, my Lord.
Okay, and she was trying to return to her family for safety. When she went back to her parents' home, and this seemed to be when Ken pretty much escalated even further. Like, this pissed him the fuck off. Okay? As if he just keeps topping all the shitty things that he's doing. After Trina returned back to her parents' home, Ken responded very violently. He actually went to her house, her family's house, abducted her and another woman at gunpoint, beat them, burned Trina's parents' house to the ground, and shot the family dog.
What the fuck?
Yep. Mm-hmm. You're like, please tell me he got arrested. Now, of course, these are criminal charges, okay? These are criminal charges.
Yeah.
And he was charged with statutory rape, child molestation, kidnapping, and arson. And as you can imagine, this should be the case that's going to finally put him in prison.
I'm still stuck
this
on the who the fuck signed off on your marriage certificate?
I think that's a great question. Now, like I said, this should definitely be what puts the nail in the coffin.
Yeah.
Well.
He's not going to jail, I guess. Is he?
At the time, Ken McElroy was already married to another woman. Okay. So if you think about it. Yeah. So he got married 4 times. He was married to one of them. Some of that part is funky. All we need to know is that he was married to another woman from what I was seeing. Now, before the case could even move forward, he divorced his current wife and married Trina. And of course, you're asking me this question. How is he marrying her? She's underage. Okay, well, the reason why he marries her, and it wasn't for romantic reasons, okay? More obviously for a legal one. Under Missouri law at the time, a married spouse could not be forced to testify against their husband.
Also, what fucking state? I'm sorry. I don't think we're that far in yet, but what states was it illegal, or was it not illegal? Was it legal to marry? I don't care if you're in your 20s. Mm-hmm. You're marrying a 12-year-old.
I know. No, baby, I agree. Trust me. I completely agree with everything.
You were driving a car before she was fucking born.
No, I agree. I totally agree. So the fact that he married Trina can now legally silence the key witness against him, right? Once Trina became his wife, the charges collapsed. No testimony, no case. So that means Ken and Trina are now going to just live together openly as husband and wife. And from what I was seeing, the community knew about this and they thought it was frowned upon. They were like, this is just, that's just not okay.
Yeah, no shit. I'm glad they thought it was frowned upon.
Yeah, but again, it's like, how are we going to cross this guy? What, you know, it's...
There's 240 of you guys.
Everybody just
comes
together.
And one of him.
So, yes, exactly. Now, for many people in Skidmore, this is kind of like one of the moments that the justice system just stopped working and making sense to them because they're like, dude, my goodness.
Don't
like,
say.
I also would be fed up, bro. I'd be fed up. Like, I honestly, I would just be so fed up. I'd be like,
fed
are you kidding
up and
me?
We're not even there.
I know, exactly. And so, and this was in the 1970s. Yes. Now, it's also said, from what I could see, that Ken McElroy had at least 15 kids total. And that he was married to Trina and his last wife. But regardless, he was married to Trina. Because some of the things that I found interesting or whatnot, even in the documentary, the docuseries that I was watching. It's on HBO if you guys want to go check it out. But the docuseries that I was watching, they all talked about how he was, like, Trina and his last wife were living all in the same house. And it was kind of like a...
Like a sister wives type deal?
That's what it's kind of seemed like. Yeah, but also remember Trina, she's young. Like, she doesn't know any better either. She's being abused.
At this point, if any of the other women that he's married to are actual adults, they're babysitting his other wife.
Exactly, yes.
Is she still going to school?
No, she actually dropped out of school when she was in ninth grade, and she went to live with him and the current wife.
What the hell?
Yes. So she actually dropped out of school for that, yeah. Well, and actually, no, from what I was seeing, like, it's not like she dropped out of school. He pretty much, like, took her out or something. Yeah.
What
so she stopped going
fuck?
To school. And mind you, homeboy can't even read. Like, illiterate, right? I know.
I mean, okay, you know what? He was illiterate. Maybe he confused 1-2 for 2-1 and thought she was...
He fucking knew what he was doing. I know you're being sarcastic.
Like, what the...
By the mid-1970s, the intimidation wasn't just a tactic anymore. It was obviously routine for him. People described Ken parking outside of their homes for hours or overnight. You know, obviously...
Ken, go get a fucking job.
No, I mean, he's stealing somewhere for something. He would always have a shotgun visible in his truck. And sometimes, like, he would even follow you on rural roads. I also saw that he would leave rattlesnakes left in mailboxes.
Oh.
Yeah, so he's really using this intimidation as, like, a tactic. Yeah, like, he doesn't care. He doesn't give a fuck.
Because I was like, you know, it's 70s, 80s. I know from some of the people that were my teachers in school.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, it used to be common because everyone hunted and lived on farms and everything.
Yeah.
It was common to have a shotgun mounted
in your truck. Yeah, but knowing... I completely agree. But knowing how he is and why he's doing these things, it's like he's really just...
I don't think it was
probably
mounted. He probably just held it out the window the whole time he was driving.
I could see that. A lot of the residents, hell? When I was watching the docuseries, they were talking about how, like, he just drove around. Like, he owned the place.
This is wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, this was very repeated. This behavior was, like, constantly happening, they said. And it's clearly working because a lot of people are just trying to stay away from him. And you may also be wondering, right? Not even that you may be wondering. I know you're wondering it. Like, how is he doing all this? How is he just kind of getting away with it?
I've been wondering that. I've been asking it multiple times.
So to answer your question, Ken also had a lawyer who knew exactly how to exploit a rural court system. He was kind of one of your Better Call Saul.
I was just going to say, was he a Better
Saul's
Call Saul
lawyers? And he would always get him off on whatever the fuck he got himself into.
What the hell?
His attorney, Gene McFadden, routinely would delay trials for months or years. He would request venue changes. He would file motion after motion. He would force small counties to spend money that they didn't have. So that was just kind of a way to pause the system, delay everything, or maybe, you know, it'd be like, forget it, just leave it in the past or whatever. Now, the case is dragged on so long that sometimes witnesses would move away, people's memories would fade because it's been so long, or again, he would just intimidate and use a fear tactics to take over what he wanted to do. Prosecutors, as you can imagine, were overwhelmed because judges would grant these continuances. So they're just like letting it happen. Yes.
Of course they are.
And Ken stayed free. So imagine how the residents of Skidmore feel at this point. They're probably like,
can't do shit.
Yeah, what's the point? I guess he does own it. Make him mayor. You know, like,
I mean, at this point,
he's doing whatever the hell he wants. So when people say that Ken would always get away with it, like, it really was true. It really was true, right?
Obviously, there's no, yeah. It's pretty damn clear.
He served zero prison time at this point. Nothing. In 1980, okay, we've got another crime here. 1980.
Oh, let's just add another.
Ken actually shot a local grocer, Bo Bowenkamp, in the neck during a confrontation. And even then, Ken still didn't go to prison.
Okay.
Now, apparently from what I was reading, I couldn't really 100% have it accurate. Regardless, he did shoot him, right? That's what was said. One of Ken's daughter was stealing something from the grocery store. And then when
now
Ken went to confront him.
Your daughter?
No, I don't think he had anything to do with it. I think his daughter had stolen, just say a candy bar or something.
Oh.
And so when Bo went to go confront him about it, that's where the altercation happened. And I think it happened outside of the grocery store. Regardless, it doesn't even matter. The fact is that he got shot in the neck. Thankfully, he survived, but Ken didn't go to prison. And he was actually released on bond while he appealed the conviction.
How you got money for lawyer and your bonds?
That's what I'm saying. Okay. That's what I'm saying. All right. Now at this point, he's posting bond, right? He's released on bond. So he should not be doing anything because he could go straight back to jail.
Exactly.
Right. He should not be doing it, but
let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
That's not how it works with Ken.
No,
Ken does what Ken wants. So Ken would still go around town. Ken would violate all his bond conditions. He would go around town with a gun, with his shotgun and everything, which you're not allowed to do. Not allowed to do that, especially if you're on bond. Yes. So by mid to late 1970s, something had shifted in Skidmore. People weren't just afraid of Ken anymore. They were just afraid of what would happen after they would report him because they're like, oh my God.
Last thing I need is this guy sitting out front of my house.
Right. And he's already like, you know, he's just using these intimidation tactics and nobody wants to do anything. Calling the police wasn't doing anything. And what made it worse was that it wasn't just the neighbors being targeted. Law enforcement officers, from what I gathered in some of the articles that I read, later did admit that they felt intimidated by him too. From this A&E article that I read that was written by CM Frankie, said, police also felt McElroy's ire. One night after he pulled a speeding pickup truck over, Boyer, which is one of the cops, came face to face with McElroy. I had my service weapon drawn, and I wouldn't have been the least bit surprised if he tried to do something, Boyer recalls. His eyes just really put you in defense mode. He really looked like a mean person. Which, if you see him in the photo,
yeah,
like his photo, he just looks like a piece of shit, to be quite honest with you. But yes.
Mm-hmm.
So as you can imagine, at this point, it's starting to feel like, what's the point? He's getting away with it anyways. Even the cops seem afraid of him. You know, how is it that he's not getting arrested? You're supposed to call the police when you need help and nothing's happening.
At this point, you need to call the military.
Yeah, and at this point, they believe that I just thought of like a tank show in the main Abiskin War. Ken McElroy, come out of your pickup truck.
Oh,
yeah,
yours.
that's literally what I picture. I can't. They're like, hey, my garden. Like, damn. So, yeah, as you can imagine, he's practically untouchable, it seems. Now, back to the Bo Bowenkamp incident, you know, how he shot him
in the neck.
In the neck, yes. It was 1980. Bo accused one of Ken's daughter from stealing from the store, blah, blah, blah. He banned her from the store. And Ken obviously took that personally. So he shot her in. He shot him.
In the neck.
In the neck behind the grocery store. Okay. And just to put it in even more perspective, because I know you're getting it. You get it. He's getting away with
whatever. He's a terrible person. He's going to get away with everything. At this point, he's going to eventually kill somebody in the whole town.
Exactly. And then it's going to be like, why didn't anybody do anything? Yep. Yes, exactly. So just to put it into more perspective, from that same A&E article that I referenced earlier, it stated, when he shot Bo.
Yeah.
Okay. When the call went out, state police Richard Stratton was ready. Stratton knew McElroy from a previous stop when he threatened the trooper with a shotgun.
What?
Anticipating McElroy's typical moves, Stratton waited on a back road near the Kansas border. His hunch paid off, and McElroy found himself handcuffed and charged with assault. Yay!
Holy cow, finally,
thank freaking God, okay? Now, Ken was charged with second-degree assault, and for the first time in his life, he was convicted. And
holy
he was
shit.
Sentenced to prison.
Get out.
Yes, after nearly 20 years of indictments, threats, intimidation, all this fear, all this fucking bullshit that he's doing, it finally looked like he was finally going to be held accountable. But unfortunately, that moment didn't last long. Yes, it didn't last long. Under Missouri law at the time, Ken was allowed to remain free while he appealed his conviction. And instead of being taken into custody, he posted bond yet again, so he was allowed to be free out in town. Still driving around, still showing up to the stores in town. And even worse, witnesses later reported seeing him carry firearms, which was a violation of his bond conditions.
Of course.
Yes, a hearing was scheduled to revoke his bond, but that was just postponed. Then postponed again, and once more postponed, and nothing happened. So isn't that wild, right? The other thing that I was also reading, that because a police officer did his job and arrested him, Ken actually decided to follow that police officer's wife to church one day. And she said that he pointed a gun at her and it scared her so bad that she tried leaving in her car, but he just followed her until she was able to get help.
I won't lie, I think it'd be at that point as a cop that
right.
I would be tracking your ass down. I don't know how. I'd be losing my job.
No, seriously. And I feel like he knows this. Like, he's like, you know what? I'm not going to attack you, but I'm going to attack someone you love. Because
for real. He's pulling everyone's mental strings.
Yes, he knows exactly what he's doing. This isn't like a... It's not like a coincidence. Yes, it's not a coincidence, okay? For the people at Skidmore, this was obviously devastating. This wasn't a complicated case or a shaky accusation or he said, she said. Like, everyone is seeing this, okay? Bo was shot in the neck. There was no conviction. Nothing came of it. And Ken was still free. Almost a whole year passed. Now we're in early 1981, okay? People at this point aren't scared anymore. They're actually fucking pissed.
I would imagine.
Yeah, they are mad. They're like, dude, this is ridiculous, man. This is ridiculous. They honestly felt trapped in their own town. They're like, we can't even... He's making us a target for no reason. Nothing is leading him to get prison time.
And on top of it, in a town like this, it's not that easy, it seems like, to be able to move out of the town because there's not really people moving to.
Right. That's a good point. And you also got to think about it. So the people who live at Skidmore have probably been living there for generations.
Yeah.
This is their home.
So they've inherited the property, the house.
This is their home. So the fact that there's this town bully just going around acting. And you know what's crazy? Like, this town is obviously very rural. There's so much space. How is it that, you know, there's so much space, yet he's everywhere? What is
for real?
You know what I mean? It's like, bro, I'd expect this type of behavior, not this type of behavior whatsoever, but I'd expect to see you at every freaking corner, I don't know, in a city or in a more busier.
Well, I was going to say, I'm amazed that people in the city didn't just randomly come up with the idea of, hey, how can we,
the 70s. This was the 70s. And now it's like 1981. It's not really. What do they?
Yeah.
I mean, they call the police. Nothing happens. What do they call the news? I don't know.
No. It was meaning like an accident. Like they stage an accident and then.
Oh.
Because if everyone hates him, then.
Right.
Who's going to convict the person that actually takes out the town bully?
Right. No, that's so true. Ooh, I see what you're saying.
You know?
Okay, interesting. Interesting thought. Okay. So Ken is still armed, still intimidating witnesses and walking free. And everyone there knew nothing was really standing between him and the next violent act. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anybody could be the victim. So we're going to July 10th of 1981. It's a Friday morning. And earlier that day, Ken, still free on bond, he's not supposed to be carrying firearms, but witnesses say that he still is. That morning, Ken drives through town like he always does. He has a Silverado, from what I was saying. That morning, Ken and his wife, Trina, drove into town in his pickup truck to the D&G Tavern. Now, this is a place Ken was known to frequent. And remember I said at the beginning, it's a very small town, so there's only one bar here.
Yeah.
This is the bar. So if anybody wants to go out and have fun, this is where they're going. Yes. And so knowing that, one of the things that was said was that anytime that he would show up at the bar, the owner would actually lose money because everyone else would leave.
Would leave, yeah, no shit.
They don't want to deal with him. He parked near the center of the town and went about his business like nothing was wrong. At the same time, something else was happening. That same morning, a group of townspeople met at a local hall to talk about Ken McElroy and what to do. The Noda County Sheriff was there. He was there briefly, and he had told them, you know what, just don't confront Ken. And he suggested that they focus on watching out for one another instead of maybe forming... And said, maybe let's form a neighborhood watch, right? He's like, let's maybe collectively do something together.
Don't do something stupid, please.
Yeah, don't, because please. Yeah, pretty much. Then the sheriff ended up leaving town. Now, around the same time that Ken McElroy and his wife, Trina, were at the D&G. I just want to mention before I keep going forward. There was another account, too, that he knew they were having this like town hall meeting, and he wasn't there, so he took that. So that's why he went into the town to be like, "What the hell's going on?" And he went to the bar, but I'm not entirely sure. Regardless, all that we need to know, there was a meeting, and he just so happened to be in the town. He went to the D&G, okay, to the tavern. Now, word, as you can imagine, travels fast in a small town. After the meeting broke up, people began moving toward the center of the town, toward the tavern. At some point, Ken and Trina left the bar and got into the pickup truck that was parked right outside, right in front of the tavern. And by the time that they get in the car, dozens of people were outside the tavern.
Oh, shit.
Dozens of people were outside the tavern. Ken and Trina are in the pickup truck, okay? Ken obviously is behind the wheel. Trina's in the passenger seat. He didn't pull the truck away or anything. They were just waiting in the car. He knew some shit was going to go down. Mm-hmm. Why is everybody around?
Yeah.
The crowd had stopped moving altogether. So everyone's just like hovering around the car. And outside the tavern. Yeah. Now witnesses. It's like a mob. And the witnesses, from what I was seeing, most accounts put somewhere between 30 to 50 people outside at that moment.
Damn, that's like a six of the whole town.
I was going to say. Damn. That's practically the population. Yes. Okay. I even read some accounts that there were up to 90 people at the town center. Regardless, 30, even just 30 alone is a lot. Okay. But 30 to 50, let's just say there. Just know there's a lot. That's a lot of town folk for one place at one time. Okay. Like you said, big portion of the population.
Yeah.
Ken stayed in the truck. According to later accounts, from what I was seeing, he appeared very calm. Trina would actually end up telling him, hey, maybe we should leave. Like, I'm scared. Something's happening. She even stated that she felt that the air shifted and just something was different. She warned Ken that they should leave because something just wasn't right. But he didn't. He was like,
of course not, because he's the town bully. Who's going to make him leave?
Yeah, and I bet you anything, he's probably like, oh, let them try something. Like, you know what I mean?
His ego.
He's that. He's like, you know, I've been getting away for 20 years. Nobody really cares. Like, screw you. Try me. He's probably like, I'll just run you over. I don't give a fuck. You know, he might even be using this, like, remaining calm as like a way, like, oh, they try to attack me.
Yeah.
And he's going to use that as a attack.
I was innocent.
Yeah, I was innocent. It was like a mob.
See, this town always tries to hurt me.
Yeah. Like, you know, because he's fucking stupid and annoying like that, right? Seconds after this happens, right? This is the whole mob. Shots are fired. Investigators were able to confirm the following. Ken was shot twice in the head.
Oh, shit.
The shots came from at least two different weapons. Once by a center fire rifle, and once by a 22 rimfire rifle.
Damn.
Okay. No one has ever agreed on the total amount of shots fired. From what I could see, estimate could be around 15 shots total.
Damn, this is like a Bonnie and Clyde situation.
Yeah, like they did not want to miss. They did not want to miss. They're like, you know what? We're going to do this. We can't miss.
That sheriff definitely had left that meeting going, I don't think Kitten's going to see another day.
And who's to say that sheriff wasn't in on it?
Exactly. I did kind of speculate.
You did speculate on that, okay? You did speculate on that. Some witnesses say that they did hear fewer shots. Others say they heard more, but let's just say around 50 shots. Regardless, two of the shots that they shot hit him straight in the head. He died almost instantly. Trina, they actually pulled her out of the truck. They unharmed her and they took her away from the scene and they just told her, like, get out of here. I saw different accounts. They either told her to get out or they actually took her somewhere that was just like away from the scene, like just somewhere else.
Yeah, because their issue isn't with her.
Right. And you know what's crazy? There's this resident, okay? I forgot his name. Oh man, but if you watch the docuseries, there's this resident that he was there when all this happened, I think, or he knew more about it or whatnot. And he said that on the show, on the docuseries, he's like, the only thing they did wrong that day was not kill his wife too.
Damn.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Because again, remember, she is also a victim, but she doesn't know it. After all this happened, and we'll talk a little bit more about it, but I just want to mention it now. After all this happened, she would go to the news and be like, he was such a great guy. He never did that. He didn't burn my family's house. And they would be like, but then why would you say that? Yeah. And she's like, I was lying.
She's like, I burned it myself.
No, like she practically was just saying that he was the best guy out there, that he was the best father, that he was all this, he was all that, that he never abused her. He never did nothing. And I remember in the docuseries, his kids said that they don't remember him in front of them directly abusing Trina. But like, let's say they would hear a lot of loud noises and then Trina would come in with like a black eye. So it's like you can kind of can tell what's going on here. You know,
I was going to say, wait, what if it's a huge plot twist and this whole town is like that town in the end of the movie Ballerina? Where she shows up and it seems like it's all normal civilians, but they all are like armed and super elite.
Oh my God. Like the roles were actually reversed and he actually was a victim.
He actually was getting messed up by all the other townspeople.
That'd be crazy. You know, that'd be crazy. Yeah, I know. That's again, like she feels like that's probably how it is. Like, they killed him or whatnot. And we'll talk a little bit more about it, but he dies almost instantly. They pull her from the truck. And just as quickly as everybody formed, that's as quickly as everybody left.
Kind of figured.
And I'm telling you, people like walked, like dispersed as if nothing happened. It's eerily, right? Some people walked away. Some people got in their cars. Others just went home. Others just went into the tavern. Everybody acted normal.
People just like, hey, you want to get a beer now?
Yeah, no, literally is exactly how they were driving. Now, when law enforcement, arrived, no one really chased, like no one went to his aid. It happened. Everybody dispersed.
Yeah.
He's just pretty much in the car. No one called an ambulance. Nothing. When law enforcement ends up arriving, the scene was already quiet. Ken was slumped in the driver's seat of his pickup truck. The windows of the truck were shattered. And despite the fact that, like I said, 30 to 50 people, however, is a lot of people, had been standing there moments earlier, when police began asking questions, no one claimed to have seen who fired the shots. They were like, I didn't see anything. I don't know who did it. Oh, I heard the shots, but I didn't see where they came from. I wasn't there. That's what everybody said. Not one person in the hours and days that followed, the investigators interviewed dozens of witnesses. Okay. There's even if you go on YouTube, you can find the video of certain witnesses or like interviews that they've done with certain people, and everyone's like, nah, I don't know what happened. I wasn't there. I didn't hear who it was. And oh my God, it was crazy. One of the investigators was like, okay, well, if you did know who shot him, would you tell us? And this one lady's like, nope, I wouldn't. And somebody else was like, yeah, I wouldn't either. I was like, God damn. I was like, yo.
They really said.
Yes.
Mouth zip. He's mouth zip, gone.
That's not my problem.
Sorry.
Now it's up to God. They're like, that's not on me. No, but literally they did not.
All we did was take him to judgment day.
Yeah. No, and they said, they were like, I'm not denying being there. I'm just saying I didn't see anything else. So imagine you've got practically like half the people that live there saying all the same things, right? Now I know 30 to whatever, 30 plus people, but that's a lot of witnesses. That's a lot of people all saying, nope, I haven't seen anything. Ken McElroy had been killed in broad daylight in front of a crowd, and yet officially the shooter was unknown. Now the investigation begins immediately, which I find funny that the investigation begins immediately. Now I get it. I get what you guys are thinking. It's still murder. I totally get it. Okay. I'm just saying funny how the investigation began immediately when every time somebody else gets shot, it's like halted,
that's true,
pause,
that's true.
Whatever.
Hear me out. This guy gets fully murdered. Now, if it's just swept under the rug and they don't even investigate, now they take the risk of having the next level of government potentially showing up.
No, 100%.
So they probably don't want that.
Yeah, no, 100%, because the FBI does join in on the investigation.
Oh, yes. And they definitely did not
want
that.
I mean, they have
probably
to. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, I totally get it. Yeah. They have to. It's protocol. That's what they're doing. I just find it very interesting that whenever the residents are literally calling for help, he's like just doing whatever the hell he wants. Okay, so investigation begins immediately. Local law enforcement interviews witnesses. They process the scene. But the lack of cooperation obviously becomes very, very obvious because of the number of people present and the complete silence from all the witnesses. The case drew national attention, which brought in the FBI. Mm-hmm. Yes, so Little Skidmore, Missouri is plastered all over the news, okay? And plastered because the town bully was murdered. Federal agents interviewed dozens of people as well. They reviewed the scene. They reviewed statements. They reviewed Ken's long history with the town. And they even explored whether the case could even be prosecuted as a civil rights violation. But they ran into the same issue. No one was talking. You can't convict no one of nothing.
Poor
of
FBI
something.
Director at that time probably was, yes, just like, yo, we're just wasting resources. These people got what they wanted. Nobody's going to speak up.
No one was saying anything. No one saw a thing.
Damn.
No one saw a thing. People admitted they were there. They admitted they heard shots. But no one named the shooter. No one described a plan. No one identified weapons. So without eyewitness testimony, without recovered firearms, without confessions, there's nothing that they can do. What else can they do? No one's saying anything.
Nothing.
Who are you going to convict? No one?
Nothing.
That's not how that...
There's nothing doing.
Yeah, and there's nothing that they can even build a case on. Now, a coroner ruled that Ken's death is a homicide caused by gunshots fired in the head.
Yeah.
By an unknown person or persons, right? A state grand jury was convened, then a federal grand jury. Both reviewed the evidence, but they both declined to indict anyone.
That's right.
By 1982, the federal investigation was officially closed and the case remains unsolved. Now, throughout all this, right, like I said earlier, Trina was very vocal. She maintained that she knew who had fired the shots. Now, the problem is, she says she knows who fired the shots, but at this point it could be a he said, she said situation. She's also not a very reliable witness from what I'm gathering, because like I said, in the interviews that she's doing, she's very much contradicting herself. And it's, again, she's also a victim. She doesn't know any better. She also experienced something very traumatic, both being with him, but also she's a kid, but also experiencing the death and murder
of her. Yeah.
Yes. So
I don't even want to give him the title of husband.
I know.
Nasty.
I don't even either. I know. That's why I'm like, in this guy, right? This like older. Ugh. Yes. So she maintained that she knew who had fired the shots. Now, early on, she named Del Clement, which was a local rancher, as one of the men responsible. This accusation didn't come out of nowhere, though, because Ken and Del knew each other. They had done business together in the past, including cattle related dealings. Okay. And at one point, they were on friendly terms to an extent, but by 1981, that relationship had soured, as you can imagine. Anybody that's in any type of friendship with him is sour.
I actually knew Dale. We went to school together. He didn't
are you
do
doing,
it.
Yeah, no, like we were actually together that day. What's
I was working with him on the farm. We were actually in Florida, though.
What is that? That's like a TikTok trend when they're like, oh, tell my husband said that if he could that if I could read this, then we can't go to like on vacation or something. And they're like, what are you talking about, lady?
I was thinking you were talking about the ones there. It's more of a men trend, but
yeah, they all do it though.
There's this girl, she'll post a video and then all of a sudden one guy will be like, you're so beautiful. Like, you should give me a chance. And then all of a sudden all the guys that are like in the comments are commenting under him and they're like, thank you so much for saving my life that one day.
Or oh, like, that's funny. You rescued my dog from that burning building. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like giving her more reasons to give him a chance. That's so funny. That's funny. No, seriously. So yeah, you and Del were hanging out.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't born yet, but we were hanging out.
Well, by 1981, that relationship had soured, and accounts from investigators and journalists described growing tension between the two men in the months leading up to Ken's death. According to Trina, though, she saw Del retrieve a rifle from his truck just before the shooting happened. She said she warned Ken to leave, but like we said, he didn't. And Del denied any type of involvement, of course. And crucially, no one else backed up Trina's account. No other witnesses placed a weapon in his hands. No firearm was ever recovered. And no physical evidence tied him to the shooting. So without corroboration, prosecutors can't move forward. No one speaking. The only person that could actually hear, I mean, that said they knew who did it or whatnot was her. And they can't. There's nothing else they could do about it. So Del Clement was never charged. He lived the rest of his life maintaining his innocence and refusing to publicly revisit the case. Years later, when he was asked about it, he would only say that everything he had to say had already been said, and he passed away in 2009.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. So in reality, we also don't know if he did it.
I mean, I'd take that shit everybody to the grave,
too. Everybody said that he didn't have
it. I think everybody in that town's going to take that shit to the grave.
Yeah, well, also, like, who's to say he did have the rifle? I don't know. Just because he had a bad... Also, at this point, like, Ken had a bad relationship with everyone.
Everyone.
But, yeah, everyone, okay? Everyone. And also seeing that there was two shooters. Okay, where's the other one? Why are we always just talking... Why are we talking about that?
Also, who's to say it wasn't his rifle in his own car that got too hot or something and something happened? You know? I mean... Just saying.
So without corroboration to Trina's accusation and after later walking back parts of her statement, like I said, she was a lot of the like they would ask her, but you said this. And she'd be like, no, it wasn't like that. It was a lie. And people are just twisting my words. And that's not what happened. My family said that, not me, and all this stuff. So unfortunately, she really was. I mean, if you see her in the interviews, she is a grieving widow. You could tell she's very she's going through it. Now, Trina publicly insisted that her husband had been murdered and that the town had protected the people responsible, okay? Which, in the documentary I was watching, it's called... I didn't want to say the name because I felt like it might have given you a tip. It's literally called No One Saw a Thing. That's why I didn't want to say... And it's based off of this whole... It's like a really long docuseries, and they interview a bunch of the residents there. They show you clips. They show you... like investigation photos and footage and all that. It's very, very interesting. If you guys want to go check it out, it's on HBO. Highly recommend. She was saying how he was never in any trouble. People were just always looking for trouble with him. Yes, that it was everyone else that was always looking for trouble with him, that he was such a great father and such a great provider. And she said that he was never abusive. But remember, I did say that his own kids even said, I mean, and it sucks because his own kids were even saying like, my dad was murdered. And I'm like, shit, like, yeah, that's true. I mean, he was, and now his kids have to deal with the repercussions of who his dad was and what happened and all that stuff. So a lot of them also moved out from Skidmore because they were afraid that the town, they killed his dad, that now they're going to come kill them and whatnot, essentially. So everybody was scared. They did leave Skidmore. But like I said, she is clearly also a victim of Ken. He was a sex offender. He was an abuser. He was a killer. He was a pedophile. He's a rapist. The list goes on, right? And he impregnates her at 14. He terrorizes the town, her family, burns down their house, kills their dog just to get his way. So everything she was saying, it was just sad because I was like, damn, girl, like you're defending your abuser. I mean, fuck. But she honestly just, like I said, she doesn't even know any better. She's also one of his victims.
Yeah.
So all over that doc, she's defending him like, oh no, you know, he he isn't the terrible one. They are. They're the ones that murdered him. And it's like, he was terrible. Yeah. He was terrible. Okay. Like, I mean, let's not, you know, two things can be true, right? He's terrible. Yeah. And he was murdered. So, yes, we could admit that.
It's tough, I think, for people in those positions to also admit it, you know.
And it was just sad because she was devoted to him in like a very twisted way. It was just twisted. I mean, obviously, he's a horrible human being. But now, am I saying, does it make it right? No. I think it's complicated to answer, but also I'm a believer that what goes around comes around. I have no control over that. So I totally get it. Not saying it's right, not saying it's wrong. Actually, I don't even know what I'm saying. You tell me what you think.
You answer what you think.
Yeah, you tell me what you think, okay? So yes, it's really up to you. You tell me what you think, but I think it's a complicated question. It's a very complicated question, but one of Skidmore's residents, I feel, said it best, and his name was Mark Renig, and I think I'm pronouncing the last name right. One of the residents of Skidmore said, "Was it good? No. Was it justified? Only because there was no justice." Mm-hmm. So that was like, damn.
That makes sense.
Yes.
That makes sense.
Others feel that the law should have not been taken into their own hands. So there is a lot of that. You know, it wasn't right because it's still murder but he had to stop. They had to stop this conversation. Like, this needed to stop.
Yeah. Nothing was being done.
And again, they were probably afraid that they were getting to a point that he's going to end up murdering one of us. And then what? He's getting away with everything.
If anything, everyone's going to be scared that.
Right.
Who's next?
Right. So that's what I mean. It's a very complicated question. I think it's a very complicated topic. But like that Skidmore resident said it, was it good? No. Was it justified? I mean, only because there was no justice.
Yeah.
Yes. So a few years later, in 1984, Trina took the case to civil court. She filed a $5 million wrongful death lawsuit against the town of Skidmore in Nottoway County, local officials, and Del Clement, the man she believed was responsible for her husband's death. Even though he was never charged, the case didn't end up going to trial. Instead, it seemed to have ended quietly with an out-of-court settlement totaling, from what I could see, just over $17,000. No one admitted fault, though. No one admitted fault. And according to reporting at the time, the settlement was meant to avoid the cost of a drawn-out legal fight rather than just determine what the responsibility of it was.
Yeah.
So, yes, after Ken's death, Trina did leave Skidmore. Like I said, she raised her children away from the town. And over the years, she continued to defend Ken publicly, describing him as a provider and a protector. Her version of Ken never really matched the one most of Skidmore residents remembered, mm-hmm. or people who knew him remembered. And that divide never really closed. That's just kind of how it always was.
Yeah.
So after Ken McElroy's death, Skidmore didn't suddenly just become peaceful. Because I will say, that's another thing that I'm understanding, right? Like, I'm seeing it from their point of view. Life is going to go on. There's always going to be some tough guy. There's always going to be a bully, right? So it's like, it's taking matters into your own hands. How far does this go? So I totally get it. Skidmore didn't really become peaceful immediately. It's not like they shot him and it's like, great. Like,
we're all
the
done.
World is better now, right? I mean, I totally get it. I understand, right? The town continued to shrink, just as it had been shrinking before 1981. Businesses were closing, jobs disappeared, young people kept moving away. But Skidmore now had a lot of spotlight. And it was now known at least, as the place where the town took matters into their own hands. So it was a very fascinating story for so many across the country, as you can imagine, because, you know, the town shoots the town bully and then no one ever says a word and rats out who it is.
Yeah.
It says something. Yeah, and also, I don't think a lot of people are going to want to move there knowing that.
Too much attention.
And the residents there don't like it because they're like, well, this was like a matter that we had to take into our own hands. And this
just
doesn't
stay out of it. It doesn't bother. It doesn't impact you. Yeah. Get out.
And they were pretty much just saying like, this doesn't. How would you say it? Like, this doesn't
describe the town
and the people that live here. It was just like a one-off
incident. This isn't a reflection of the town.
Yes, exactly.
This is a reflection of one incident.
Of one incident,
person.
Right. And it was just, like it said,
and accumulated over many years,
Right. And unfortunately, like, when some type of news spreads like that over the media, that's not how everybody's going to portray it or understand it, and it's going to be portrayed. Well, the violent history didn't stop at Skidmore, though, unfortunately. There was nothing that connected to Ken after his death,
mm-hmm.
but after he did pass, the town felt either cursed or haunted, because nearly 20 years later, in October 2000, Wendy Gillenwater was killed. She died after being brutally beaten by her boyfriend, Greg Dragoo, on a rural road outside of Skidmore. Now, this was a domestic violent homicide, yeah. Okay? He was arrested, persecuted, and convicted, and he received a life sentence. There was no vigilante justice or silence in that sense. This is a whole completely different case.
Yeah.
But following that year, Branson Perry, in April of 2001, he was a 21-year-old man from Skidmore. He disappeared. He stepped outside in his home to put jumper cables into a shed, never came back out, and his truck and belongings were left behind.
Huh.
Yes, so the jumper cables were later found back in the shed, and despite years of the investigation and renewed searches, Branson Perry had never been found, and his case still remains open.
Wow.
So investigators have been exploring a lot of other theories with that case, including maybe something drug-related. I didn't look too much into it, but I was just reading so much about Skidmore itself because there's another case that happened in 2004.
Damn.
Yes, in December of 2004, that was the most widely known case tied to Skidmore after Ken's death. And it was Bobby Jo Stinnett, who was 8 months pregnant. She was murdered in her home. And the crime shocked the entire country because her killer was Lisa Montgomery, and she was not from Skidmore. She traveled to the town to murder Bobby Jo and kidnap her unborn child.
What the hell?
Yes. So Lisa Montgomery actually confessed. She was convicted in federal court and later executed. Still, obviously, none of these cases are connected to Ken McElroy or the town's past, essentially, but it's just kind of like now they're all grouped together as like Skidmore is now this like a haunted cursed town that you don't want to go.
Bad things.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So what really lingered in Skidmore wasn't the constant violence. It was pretty much just the weight of being known for that one moment in time with Ken McElroy.
That's
yes.
Wild.
And then, like I said at the beginning of the episode, the town has been shrinking. So it's not like it's
more people are just trying to get the hell out.
Right, exactly. So today, Skidmore is very quiet, just a small town that continued on. And if you talk to anybody there today, everyone just wants to stop being remembered for the events that took place in 1981. Yeah, yes, because they're like, okay, let's let it go. And plus, I mean, I don't know. I would say that though, whoever was there that day, most likely, I mean, it's probably on a lot on the older side passed. Yeah. So we'll never know who shot. Never know what happens, but the no one said. I'm just shocked that after all these decades, no one said anything. Like, damn, that's a real, I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was like, that's
I'm picking up what you're putting down. So, like,
isn't that crazy?
Wow. To think
that actually really happened.
Barbara, you got me fucked up with that story.
Tom's face is so, you know, I always do the snippets of the social on social so you guys can see.
There's plenty of faces for
this
one.
No, there's a lot of faces. I should do a video of just faces of Tom. The faces of Tom, literally.
I'm pretty sure the first jaw drop lasted for at least a solid minute.
No, it did. You looked like that Screaming Man painting. The Van Gogh one. And he's like, it looks like he's on acid. Yes, literally.
Wow.
I know. No one saw a thing.
It's a very
interesting docuseries for sure.
Crazy.
Yes, I know. And he also just looked evil.
He did. He was giving me, I can't think of it. We watched a movie recently and there's an actor that always plays the bad guy. And he kind of looks similar.
Oh, no, it wasn't a movie. It was a show. Ha ha. Let's circle back to the beginning of the episode when I was talking about how he doesn't watch shows. I put on a show. It's His and Hers. It's a new one on Netflix. I'm watching it. He's randomly watching it. Oh, shit. What's going on? What's happening?
Oh, I wasn't thinking of that guy. From,
which one are you talking about?
That's really good. I can't think of the guy's name that's the main actor in there, but fucking
yes,
amazing.
Yes, yes,
he's good in everything.
Isn't he in Prison Break? No.
I think no. Money Heist, I think he's in.
You're right.
He was also in like Wolf of Wall Street, all that. He's been in a lot of movies.
Hold on, I gotta get his name. John Bernthal.
Yes,
Homeboy.
He was in Accountant 2, right? He plays the brother in Accountant 2.
Oh, yes. He does. And he's Punisher. That's what it is.
Yes.
Punisher and Daredevil.
He's such a badass actor,
too. Oh, he's in Fury. Okay, cool.
Yes.
He's in Fury.
Oh, we still got to watch Fury.
oh, now we want to watch a show or a movie that you want to watch, huh?
No,
no, I'm joking. I'm joking. Okay. Okay, no, which one are you talking about, though?
I can't think of the guy's name, but it's... I keep wanting to say Mel Gibson, but it's not Mel Gibson.
Oh, you're talking about... Because we watched Greenland too, right?
Yes.
You're talking about... No. He's not the main guy.
No, not Gerard Butler.
Dude, just give me a show. Give me a title.
I don't know.
Give me a description.
Maybe I have nothing.
No, okay.
Moving
I'm like,
on.
Give me a color. Give me a color.
Thank
Mike.
You for joining us today on the Codman.
So what you thought, though? Crazy.
That is wild.
Crazy.
That is wild.
I honestly also, another takeaway from this episode is that what a community that just collectively got together to, like, interesting. Very interesting.
I'm going to just tell you right now, I think my dad is going to have a lot to say about this one.
Oh, my God. Yes. I can't wait to hear. I can't wait to hear. He always cracks me up with his commentary. Just like you, like father, like son. Seriously.
I mean.
Thank you for joining us today on Macabre Mondays. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you know more about today's episode or caught a detail we might have missed, let us know. We don't know everything. We're just looking it up as we go. You know?
We're just husband and wife.
Husband and wife.
And really, I'm not looking anything up.
He's not. I'm doing it. I'm tired.
But with that said, we would love to hear from you guys. Especially if you're new to the show, if you have a story that's strange, sinister, or downright spooky, just like today's episode,
yes,
doesn't matter how small you might think it is, send it our way. You can email us at macabremondayspodcast@gmail.com or head over to macabremondays.com and submit your story. Yours just might be featured on an upcoming listener episode, as you heard today.
Yes, please, Barbara. This is such a good submission. Yes.
Well done, Barbara. I have to say, it didn't scare me. It just was jaw-dropping.
No, it pissed
and
you
I
off, though, I could
here
tell.
For it.
Yeah,
oh,
you were, like,
off,
so heated.
I don't think you guys understand. I was holding back a lot of sailor's mouth.
No, I told her when she...
I was doing the best I could.
Because I messaged her, and I was like, hey, I'm like, do you want me to say your name or remain anonymous? Like, either way, it doesn't matter. And she said, no, say my name. And she was like, I can't wait to hear what Tom has to say. And I told her, I was like, oh, I can't wait either, because he's going to fucking hate this guy. I know it. And she laughed at it. And I was like, oh, yes, because we don't condone bullying around here, okay?
No, I was bullied. Long story short, was bullied most of my life. And
yeah.
So I don't put up with that stuff.
Yeah. Just
it's
not
just
nice.
Not cool.
So send in your submissions, though, because we love scaring Tom and scaring him in every other way, you know, pissing him off. We'll see you next Monday for another sinister, strange, and spooky episode. Stay tuned. More mystery is just around the corner. But until then, stay spooky and stay safe, everyone. Well, stay curious, too.
I was waiting for the curious. And
yeah,
then
stay
I...
curious and stay safe, everyone. Goodbye.
Goodbye.